Welcome to the NJIOA 2025 Winter Retreat and to the afternoon keynote address. This year's retreat theme is Feeling Groovy, and here to give the keynote presentation is Susan G. Susan is a student of the Big Book, a devoted member of our fellowship for many years, and a really good friend to NJIOA. She lives her life fully committed to the 12 steps and is steadily giving service and passing on her inspiring message of recovery to us all. We are honored to welcome her here today, this afternoon. Okay, Susan, it's all yours.
Thank you so much, Allison, for that lovely welcome. I became friendly with this fellowship during our time in COVID and Zoom. And as I always say, they do a phenomenal job, from the flyers to the way they remind you. I mean, everything is concierge service, and I really, really appreciate it. So hi, and thank you to my friends who've heard me a million times before but have still come today. Always appreciate seeing smiling faces. And to those of you who I don't know, it's lovely to meet you. And I'm going to share with you my photos, which are a demonstration of what has happened to me in this program. However, hopefully once I start sharing my story of what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, you will identify regardless of the photos that you are going to see. So, seeing that, I need to have my fabulous friend Jen, who's here, help me change up my photos. She has said she would. I just need to get them to her. So, this is what it was like. I grew up, I was always looked different to my friends. I can't tell you, as a child, I was morbidly obese, but I did not have a freeway running through my legs in ballet class. That I can tell you. That picture on the left is taken in Regent's Park when I still lived in England. And I'm sitting on a seesaw. It's very, very uncomfortable. And yeah, and that was my life. So my top weight was 250 pounds that I'm aware of, size 26 dress. And I went up and down many, many times. It was not hard for me to lose weight. I want to make that clear. It wasn't. Diets work. But I'm bodily and mentally different. So when they tell you that you're on maintenance, I'm left with this big God-sized hole, and I don't know where to go or what to do. And what normally happens in, if you know, page 52 in the Big Book, I am those bedevilments. And today I'm recovered. I have freedom, and we'll get to that story. So this is what it looked like. This was what it was like when I lost my weight. So yes, I have blonder hair now and straighter hair, thank you to great products and chemicals and all sorts. This is what I look like today. I decided to put on something fun and bright. I'll tell you about my morning later. But I've owned this dress for 10 years. And some of you know my friend Sabrina, and she had two weddings, and one was very small in her living room. And this is what I wore there. So that is a demonstration that this works. This works. And here you go. Step 12, fun and fellowship. That's my nephew down on the left. And then that's my cousin there. They're on a plane right now to Miami. And there we go. And there's my nephew again. That's my sister in the green dress. And then some other people who you're going to hear speaking later. You've just seen their photos. So I don't prepare before I speak. I know my story, and I truly believe that God always gives me the words that somebody else needs to hear, because I know my story. But I also continue to do this because I need to be reminded of what it was like. And when I tell you certain things, I can tell you it turns my stomach when I think about asking very, very quietly for a seatbelt extender on a TWA plane back from London and it being screamed down the aisle. I remember that cringe and that humiliation, but I still couldn't stop eating when I came home. I didn't eat for the 10 hours on the plane, but I came home very annoyed. So I'll show that air stewardess. And it's funny, I opened my book and it fell open on page 60. And here are the ABCs. And I thought, okay, well, here it is, what I'm going to be doing today, giving you a description of me as a compulsive overeater, food addict, you know, how the ism worked in my life. We're going to talk about 1, 2, 3, and 4, because we have a lot of time today. So I'm going to run my story through the steps and through my experiences and my personal adventure before and after. And then it's hopefully going to make very clear, or at least it will make very clear to you, that I am an alcoholic with food and cannot manage my own life. No human power could have relieved me of my alcoholism. And the only thing that saved me was God, that God could and would if he was sought. And that's the center point of my story today. That's my North Star of what always gets me through. And I wasn't someone who came here agnostic, but I only spoke to God on Sunday night because it was always a panic of what am I going to wear on Monday morning to work. So, like you, I did all of the so I finally, fully conceded to my innermost self 25 and a half years ago that I couldn't do this alone. I came into these rooms in the 80s when I moved here. I didn't have a car. I'd been given a lift to a gym where pleasantly plumped ladies went to exercise. Not going to give the name. The person's passed away now. You can figure it out which gym it was. If you're a girl like me, you will know. And they said they were going to a meeting. And I don't even know if I heard the word Overeaters Anonymous at the moment. It was something about a meeting I remember to help with food, because I was thinking about that the other day. And I had no choice because I had no way to get home. And the buses in LA, they're not great. And back then they were even worse, and I wouldn't have known the way. So I went to this meeting, and it was what was called a 100-pounder meeting. And we have all kinds of different meetings here, anorexic, bulimic, this focus, that focus. So a 100-pounder is what I'm called because I've lost over 100 pounds. And I went to this meeting and it was very overwhelming. It was a really, really crowded room. Meetings at the time used to be 2 hours. They said it was so that people could talk to the newcomers in between. I think it's because they all went outside to have a cigarette, because that seems what happened. There was a mass exodus at this 15-minute break that people would go out and have a cigarette. And I went to this meeting. I didn't understand it. And I'd like to think I'm sort of intelligent, but I didn't understand it. So I just decided that it wasn't for me, it didn't work, and that it was probably a cult. So I must steer really, really clear of it. So I continued on my way. At home, I always dieted, but there wasn't as much available to me as there was here. When I moved to Los Angeles, I had the misnomer that everybody looked the way I look today, and that was not true. I didn't know that you could drive through somewhere and buy X, Y, and Z. I didn't know that shops stayed open 24 hours a day. This isn't the way I grew up. And at the time in England when I grew up, everything was closed on a Sunday. Everything was closed. Today it's different. Some restaurants would be open, but in the mornings, everything shut down. By dinner time, you'd have some restaurants open. So you could go and get petrol, and like there's a 7-Eleven there if you needed something. So that was huge for somebody like me. You can drive through, you can eat in your car. Oh my gosh. So I went in and around this forever. And as I always say in my story, little did I know that God had moved me to the Mecca of the 12-step world. And on every street corner, there is, well, not as many OA meetings. There were 200 OA meetings out here in Los Angeles, where I lived before the pandemic. But Kelly's here from LA. She can tell you, but there are tons of AA meetings. We have less OA now, but there's an AA clubhouse I can walk to in 5 minutes from my house called Ohio Street that Clancy I used to own. He's passed away now. I mean, that is 2 minutes from my house. So it's very, very accessible. So I would go on my way and I would do all the diets. I did all the injections, all the pills, and I lost weight and I lost hair and, or everything that comes with crazy dieting of eating no food. When that lady rolled her fat onto the stage on the TV, I was like, I didn't know she'd been doing that. We did it at the same time. And in a blink of an eye, when you saw her next show and she couldn't get into her jeans, I was right there with her. Because it's really hard to sustain having 3 packets with water a day, which is about 600 calories. So, okay, where do I turn to? Well, I'd meet people and they'd say, oh, they have this thing called Overeaters Anonymous. Yeah, but it doesn't work, I would say. It doesn't work. I couldn't see the forest for the trees. And just like that story, we've been reading this. that it taught. Oh yeah, here I just turned exactly to page 82. There you go. So I'm supposed to tell you this. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. And when I was eating, that's what I was doing. That's exactly what I was doing. And then when I was on a diet or I was being good, I would say, I don't see anything the matter here. And as he says, ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? So that's talking about amends, but still that is relative to my behaviors. So I came in and out, and I would stay, and you would ask me if you could help me, and I would say yes, and I'm sorry if you were somebody who said you would help me and I didn't call you. I apologize profusely. Or I would call you for a couple of days, and then you'd ask me to write these things that felt a little American to me. It's a little too feely and emotions, and I'm not doing any of that. And they're holding hands in their meetings and they're cuddling each other. It's all very strange to me. So I think I'll go and get my jaw wired shut because that sounds like a much better plan than giving you a hug, doesn't it? Why would you not go to a dentist's house who you don't know, lay in their chair, let them numb you out, and let them sew wire in between your teeth? That or a hug? That's where I was, just like Bill Wilson. I'm never going to do this. I won't jump. I won't do this. I'll be so much better than them. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's mixing gin and sedatives, and I'm wiring my jaw shut, hysterically crying when I leave. And then I see a sign, a gorgeous yellow sign with a little girl with pigtails. And I think, oh, she makes something cold. And I could drink that with my jaw wired shut. How nice of her to be positioned right there where I can drive through. And that was how I lived my life for 3 months while my jaw was wired shut. So at 250 pounds. So if you are struggling today or have a lurking notion, that strange mental twist, let me share with you how you can maintain your weight at 250 pounds, having your jaw wired shut, driving through. That was a lot of calories that I got down a day to keep that weight up. That tells me that no human power can save me. So I kept on going and going like this until, you know, the late, yeah, it was around 1998, 1999. And I finally ran out of ideas and I was miserable. I've had the seatbelt extender. I've had people ask me if I'm pregnant. I've had my thighs rubbed together. I've had this. I've had doctors saying this to me. All that frothy emotional appeal. And it says, you know, we've begged, we've been on the firing lines. And I just couldn't stop. And I would sit here and I would not here in this specific house, but I would sit in my other house and cry and just think, what is wrong with you? How can you be here again? And yet, one more time, there I was, down on the ground and bigger than the last time. Because nobody goes on a diet to weigh 250 pounds, to wear a size 26 dress that when they're going to a party, they have to go to a store called the Forgotten Woman because that's the only one available with big sizes. You know, this was a couple of decades ago, and I know today, but again, I just couldn't stay stopped. So finally, the day came, and I got back from a trip in London with my family, no surprise. And I was just things weren't going my way. It just wasn't working out. And as my friend, I'm sure she'll say this later, I was feeling very itchy, bitchy, and twitchy, very. And God just tapped on my shoulder and I was standing. And these stories to me are such God moments that however long I tell them for, I remember these moments of standing in Heathrow Airport and they're saying, your plane is overcrowded. Would you like X amount dollars in a voucher and take the next plane? And that's where God intercepted. And absolutely not. Absolutely not. I need to get back because I knew I was done. And of course, there is Overeats Anonymous in the UK, but I wouldn't have known where to find it. And I'm getting back on a plane now. And I came back in and I was done. Just like when Ebby came knocking at Bill's door, when Bill found Dr. Bob, when they found alcoholic number three, all of those people, I was out of ideas. So I got back and I had some numbers because I had a nice collection, obviously. But I will be honest with you, I still had a lurking notion because I called somebody in Florida to be my sponsor. I thought, okay, I'm going to do this, but if I do it with these women here, they might know where I live, they might want to socialize with me, and I'm just going to learn what they do, and then it will be okay because I know how to diet. I've gotten slim many times before. I just have to know what page in this big book here that I didn't call the big book, but it is a very big book. There must be a few pages that if you learn them, you know what to do. Doesn't work that way. So here I am. So I come back, I beg this woman to sponsor me. And another turning point, it's a Sunday night. Well, that's rubbish, isn't it? Because Sunday night, what am I going to do? You have to have your last hurrah. You have to have that last party. You know, Bill Wilson's was him dragging his mattress downstairs. I'm not sure what I was planning on mine being, but it didn't work out because this woman, Bonnie, saved my life in that moment. She asked me, first of all, she tried to give me a very unrealistic time to call her, which was, I think it was at 4:30 or 4:45 in the morning. And I said, that's fine. She says, it's going to be 5 days a week. I said, that's fine. And then here comes the hammer, right? And it talks about that in the big book, but in a different way. Whereas if you've got a headache, would you hit your head on the hammer? But here was the message to me. What are you going to eat for dinner? And shock, horror, those feelings building up. I'm like, what is she talking about? So I said, well, actually, I was going to start in the morning. And because she identified with me, and I didn't know how much I identified in with her yet, other than she had weighed 350 pounds and at the time had been doing this for 15 years. So she had a small body, which is all I thought I wanted at the time. And I said, well, I was going to start in the morning. And she said, well, if you start in the morning, she said, no, sorry, excuse me, let me quote it correctly. She said, Susan, if you don't tell me what you're going to eat tonight, you won't call me in the morning. She knew me. She knew me just like we all know each other. And I said, okay. I didn't even give lip service, shocking. I didn't mouth back to her. I just said, okay. And she said, do you have a food scale? I said, well, actually, I have several. I still had those old Weight Watchers ones that you put the cards in. Some of you are far too young. You used to have a vegetable one, a protein one, and you just put the card in the front of the scale and you would do it. So we did that. I've now moved on to digital and I just have one scale. I did that and my life started to change really, really quickly. And what changed that night was not that I put the food on the scale. I did, and that's something that I do. That's something that I choose to do. What changed was it was the first time I was 100% honest about what went on that scale and what went in my mouth. And that was when God started doing for me what I could never have done for myself. I told her exactly what I was going to eat, and that was exactly what I did. When I called her in the morning, I'd prayed, I'd meditated. It was really uncomfortable. There were no apps to listen to. I was looking around at the ceiling. I read on Awakening. I did what she asked me, 24-hour day book. And it was the longest, however many minutes at the time she told me to sit there. It felt like the world was going to end before that time ended. And, you know, I have continued to read On Awakening ever since. And here is the evidence on that, these pages. And do I know most of it off by heart? Yes, I do. But like it says right here, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So this book is like my blankie. It goes with me everywhere. So steps one, two, and three, you know, in that night, obviously I did the work in the book, but I'm just going to tell you, I worked one, two, and three standing there at my kitchen counter because I was admitting to her that I was powerless. There was no way I could do this on my own. My life was unmanageable. I had told her certain things already. And I was coming to believe in that moment that God could restore me to sanity, because here I am taking the hand of somebody far away, never seen a photo of her. There's no FaceTime, there's no video calling, there's nothing going on. I didn't meet her until a couple of months later when I went to Fort Lauderdale to give her my fifth step. That was an act of faith. That was making that decision in that moment to turn my will and my life over and see what God had in store for me. I went to, before it was Zoom, we were told to go to three meetings a week, you make three phone calls. I didn't have a cell phone. I couldn't return calls until the evening because I had my little answer phone. And that was how that went. And my life, I did lose the weight pretty quickly, and I was definitely on a pink cloud. God has reshaped everything about me, everything from the inside out, not from the outside in. And that's always where I failed. I like pretty things. I like to look a certain way, but that is not going to save my bum when I am in a crisis. What is going to save me is all of you, this fellowship together with God. That's what saves me, because when I am drowning, I can't take my own hand because I'm going to be back having my jaw wired shut. I'm going to be back having seatbelt extenders. I wasn't somebody who, I kept good jobs. I did have a lot of friends, but I wasn't very nice when I left those parties. I had all this stuff going on in my head. I had a lot of resentments, a lot of jealousy, a lot of envy of why is my life like this? Why was my mom the paranoid schizophrenic one who came to the school bus in evening clothes? Why was this? Why did my dad get remarried and then I have an awful stepmother? And why is this happening to me? Everything was, why is this happening to me? It was the big Susan song the whole time. And I really had to admit to God, the exact nature of those wrongs. And you get to do that in that fourth column. Obviously, I can't help mental illness and I can't make not nice people nice, but it's my reaction to life that I got to change. And, I'd mentioned before about the bedevilments, and it tells me that I have to, it says, I have mine written in the personal pronoun. I have to ask myself why I shouldn't apply to my human problems the same readiness to change my point of view. And before that's been talking about airplane travel and everything else. And I am having trouble with personal relationships. I can't control my emotional natures. That was absolutely the truth. Always. A prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I did make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I'm full of fear. I'm unhappy. And I can't seem to be of real help to other people. Well, I would tell you, I'm so nice to you. I had your present professionally gift wrapped. It was really thoughtful of me. Well, if you have to tell somebody, how thoughtful is it? How thoughtful is it? And also, what a waste of money that was. I used to do that a lot. It was always seeking an effect, always seeking an effect. So I will say, I know a lot of people go to other programs for, you've got money, you've got sex, you've got people. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal from this one little talk at a kitchen table, right? That everybody has somewhere to go today. I just think it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But I got to fix everything here for myself, because it just worked that way for me. It just did. I got to do the work here. The food went down. I had these jiggy feelings. Oh, go to another meeting. Call this person. Ask them for their experience. I got into the center of the herd. That was what Bonnie told me when we first spoke. She's the one who gave me that quote. Get into the center of the herd. The animals who run off get killed really quickly. And it says, if you think you can do this alone, I think it's Dr. Bob who says it. He's in his words, he says, I feel sorry for you. And this is a phenomenal place to be. There is nowhere else. I mean, it's 20 past 10 here. And clearly this is coming up right now. So this morning, I've been up since 4:30, and If you know me, I have two god children. I'm very, very close with them. And they're moving to Miami. And their mom was in those pictures, and she's my family out here. She's a little girl in the pictures and then a grown up. And when you asked me to speak here, this wasn't happening because this move has been very, very quick for them. And when I heard I was taking them to the airport this morning, of course, full of ego, I'm so glad it was me who took them to the airport. I'm the last person they're hugging in LA. Don't think all of those things didn't go through my mind. They did. But I thought, thank God I have New Jersey today to speak and to get humble and to help other people and to stay in grace, to come home, to wash my hair, to put makeup on, to put on this dress, to share a cup of tea with you. That's where I go today. And you know what? If they're supposed to live in Miami and that's where God wants them to be and they're going to have the best life, I'm going to go and visit them. They're going to be here in the summer. It's not going to be the same, but you know, today we do have FaceTime and other things. But my first thought, even though my stomach was, you know, all over the place, I'm like, okay, you gotta get home. Couldn't find a bathroom at the airport. Thank God I live close. I drove 20 minutes home. I ran in the house. You should have seen me. And then I'm like, okay, now I've got to get ready. And I'm not really sure what I'm going to say, but I'm going to share some experience, strength, and hope. And hopefully, somebody today, if you are having a lurking notion, you'll have that moment. So I'm going to fast forward. You know, I've worked the steps several times. I've done big workshops. I've done your workshops. I've done Herb K workshops. I've gone to open AA meetings. I've, you know, chaired different things, as many of you know, and I've worked on both boards that we have out here. And if you want to see how you get on with other people and want to really practice those principles in all your affairs other than with your family, give service above the meeting level. It's quite fabulous. But you know what? You also learn a lot. You learn a lot. And I've also learned everybody doesn't want to do it my way. And it's so just so interesting because I have the best ideas. But you know what? I go with grace and I'm like, oh, I didn't even know it could be done that way. Oh, we have these traditions, we have these concepts for annoying people like me who would think that they should all be redone. And let me tell you how to do this. I'm a great air traffic controller. You know, I organize people's lives all day at work. Why wouldn't you want me to organize yours? Because God will organize your life for you, not Susan. No. So we spend, you know, so much time and there are so many pages on step one. But if you include the relationship chapters, which all my sponsees, some of them are here today, know, we go through all of them and they're really important. So they go from page 89 to page 164. So that's a huge chunk too. So, and that's telling me it's not just to be nice to all of you. It's telling me there's a family involved in this. There's people who I work with. There are spouses. There are partners. There are boyfriends. There are girlfriends. There are cousins. There are siblings. Now, I can't guarantee to you that everybody in my life thinks I am a shining star. However, what I can tell you is that if I cause wreckage, I do my best to repair it, to amend it, to fix it. Because if it's something that I have broken, I do my best to do that. Sometimes outcomes don't go the way I want them to. I can't help that not everybody loves me the way I think that they should do. But, you know, what I know is that everything in here, I have to keep on practicing it because my heart keeps on opening, right? We keep on expanding our hearts. You can add to your garden all the time. You can plant more flowers. You can put more trees. You can keep on doing that. So I keep on doing that. And I have to keep on fertilizing what I'm planting. It doesn't just work because I've got a pretty red dress on today. I think it's nice anyway. And it says here that cessation of drinking is but the first step away from a highly strained abnormal condition. So that tells me that my food plan is great. It works for me, but that's only the beginning. You know, I have abstinence, says OA's definition of abstinence is abstinence is the action of refraining from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a normal body weight. Some of you come here at normal body weights. I had to work towards one. I think I'm getting near to the end because I'm getting a little bit sick of my own voice. I have a life today that is second to none, and it looks nothing like I thought it was supposed to look from Aaron Spelling shows, okay? Darren Star shows, from Sex and the City to Knots Landing to, Melrose Place, whatever age group you are, Beverly Hills 90210, Dallas, Dynasty, all those shows. It looks nothing like that. But it looks the way it's supposed to look for me. It looks the way that God thinks is best for me, and it fits me. And that's, I don't even know how much time, and that is the most important thing. And, we know all the usual things that everybody says everywhere, and I'm just going to read just two things. In Dr. Bob's Nightmare, and I did refer to this before because I really do like this. And this is, people who don't know me as well, they go, "Oh, you still go to so many meetings." And my answer to them is, I have to go because I have to know where I am today, know where I've been, but most importantly, where I haven't been yet. Because I know that 250 pounds, I could blink and it could be gone. Because by the way, I was never ever going to weigh that, never ever. I was going to hover at 198 for the rest of my life. And that was a little bit of an oopsie-daisy because that didn't quite work. And it says on page 180, what did the man or woman do or say that was different from what others had done or said? So when I read that, I think, okay, what did they tell me at Nutrisystem? What did they tell me at Diet Center? This, that, the other, all of these things. And it says, like me, and I'm just going to paraphrase it. It must be remembered that I'd read a great deal. Absolutely, I had. I'm sure I think I could have been a nutritionist. Absolutely. And I talked to everyone I knew, anyone who was interested in hearing my story about my weight and how it didn't work. Oh, I love telling you. Or who thought they knew anything about alcoholism. But this was a person who had experienced many years of frightful drinking, eating, vomiting, starving, add to the list. Who had had most all the drunkard's experience known to man, but who had been cured by the very means I had been trying to employ, that is to say, the spiritual approach, right? We have this emotional rearrangement. It talks about that in Appendix 2. And Dr. Young told Roland Hazard about it. And we talk about how we have to have this essential psychic change, essential. And it talks about things that are vital and permanent and life-giving, all of the words that they use in here. But here was what was different to going to Diet Center, Weight Watchers, or any of those places. Of far more importance was the fact that you were the first living human beings with whom I had ever talked who knew what they were talking about in regard to compulsive overeating from actual experience. In other words, you talk my language. You talk my language. And it says you knew all the answers, and certainly not because you had picked them up, because you'd read them. You have life experiences of being in this pain, in this pit of despair, in this bitter mass of morass of self-pity that happens. And I'm just going to close with this in Gratitude in Action. Kelly and I just read this week. It's on page 193. Telling my story reminds me that I could go back to where I was if I forget the wonderful things that have been given to me, or forget that God is the guide who keeps me on this path. So, New Jersey Intergroup, thank you so much. Thank you all for being here today, because I could be curled up on my couch crying and FaceTiming Jen all day, but instead, I get to put on makeup and my red dress and see all of your smiling faces, and I greatly appreciate it. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Susan, for an incredible presentation today and for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with everyone here. As Zoom host, you may stop the recording.